Meno? Nuovo.
All right, trying to get the electronics figured out this morning. Really good to be with you. Very, very excited about being here in Charlottesville. I told Yvette yesterday, I feel like I moved to Colorado. We've got in our new home and very, very thankful, very humbled by being able to be in the lake location we are, and very thankful to be with you. And I will tell you what I'm very excited about is talk to you about the subject we're going to talk about for some time. The nature of God. I've oftentimes will do sermon series on this in meetings, in entire meetings about the subject. And I've conducted it in class forms. The outline you've got is not going to be exactly the outline I'm using in this class because of the move. I got an older form. I think I led the college class in this, or you might have been in it years ago. Who knows? You know that in Auburn, this is an older outline, and I can't remember when I taught things, but. I do encourage discussion, but I also will tell you my limitations. I'm starting. I've just a few years ago. I got past 40 years old, and my hearing is a little bit limited. And when you got mask on, that is really difficult for me. But I want you to talk. I want to hear from you, and I know that we're going to be. I'm very excited about this study. There is so much that we want to talk about the nature of God. So I'm starting off with what's not on your outline, but I want to talk about foundations. And Luke chapter 6 is where I want to go. Jesus, he talked about building your foundation upon the rock. And I cannot think of a more fundamental subject anywhere than the nature of God. And what is God like? What's his character like? How do we live each day before Him? If you were to talk to somebody else about God, what would you say? And I'm serious about this. How deep are we into His character and could excitedly talk about our friends, about the nature of our God, what He's meant to us? And let me say another thing. I know I did this oftentimes with our college students, is I would say, can you pray a prayer of praise where nothing in that prayer is except that which is the attributes of God which you're praising Him for? And how long would that prayer be? These kind of things, when we understand and can develop this in our life, is the foundation for everything else. And I will say, as we go through this series, I will show you how this material relates to every doctrinal subject and question there is in the Scriptures. How many times the nature of God is appealed to in foundational doctrinal principles that some people are rebelling against today and saying, oh, we don't have to believe that. And I'll show you the nature of God demands it in time. Won't do it all this morning. We've got lots of time, don't we? And so let's go to Luke chapter 6. Verse 48 and 49, and I would like to have different readers this morning, if we can. I just think having your participation, I'd rather this not be a sermon, although I could do that, and I have done that oftentimes. Luke 6, 48 and 49, the idea of building a foundation is building your heart, is building your life. Who would like to read Luke 6, 48 and 49? All right, Connie.
And could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built a house upon the earth, against which the stream did vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great.
Not everybody makes it to become a Christian. There are people who make it, there are people who fall away. Ultimately, we're building our life. Wisdom would say we've got to know how to die first. And I'll have to tell you, turning the big 6-6, just a few weeks ago, my parents died around 60, about 72 years old. I may outlive them, may not. You know, who knows? But let's talk about this. Let's suppose today was the day you were going to die, or at least you know you're going to die within a week. You'd want to talk with loved ones. What else would you be thinking about? Class? What else would you be thinking about that your death is approaching? You're about to go somewhere that none of us are going to be there with you, maybe in time. But we're about to cross into a different realm. Who's going to take care of you now? You see, having that as the root of your life, of knowing God, makes death a powerful motivation. I'm not talking about out of fear, but out of confidence. And that's the kind of life we want to build, where, Lord, I'm going to see you. And I've already been talking to you. I know you. I've seen your character. I've seen your handiwork in my life and the life of those in Scripture. And you see, the people who know God, do you think this life's going to throw at you? Not that there's not going to be difficulties, but you're going to have strength. And you're not going to, there's a lot of things that's not going to faze you. Somebody misrepresented me on social media. My life is over. Well, no, this really doesn't matter what men may say and do. But if we know God, then there's great power in going ahead. Now, I'm not much in the building and stuff like this. I'm going to depend on Martin for all, home improvements and things like that of building. This is just kidding, Martin. But he probably knows more about some of that than I do. But this is going to be a very difficult subject. And if you're going to build a house, you have the land, what's the first thing you build? This is a really hard question. What's the first thing you build, Chris?
Foundation.
You build a foundation. So, foundations. This is the foundation for everything. Build a good foundation, you have a house that should hold up to many things. You build a bad foundation, the Lord has already told us what happens. And I will also say this. We're not talking about fantasy in this study. We're not talking about something that somebody dreamed up in their mind. And we're just out here in la-la land believing in space aliens and pie in the sky by and by. Our God is real. When I speak of reality, that which can be tested and proved, I'm not going to get into evidences today. But we're talking about reality. And when you know God, you can face life. There's a lot of people who live in fantasy worlds. And people who live in fantasy worlds don't know God. God will put you into reality. And will let you face the hard issues of life and help you see the things you need to see. And you could do it because you know God. What is it? There's a lot of quotes you've heard along these lists, but the man who fears God doesn't fear anyone. And there's something about having your life right with God. What can man do to me? I'm thinking of, again, you don't have to read the verse, but I think it's 1 Peter 3, 13 through 15. Who is going to be, it's basically who can harm you? If you know God, it's one of the earliest passages when I did a scripture memorization program. Obviously, don't remember it very well right now. So now let's go to Acts 17. Here are some things that is in your outline. Acts 17. 27 and 28. Have you ever known some people to say they're atheist, agnostic? I don't get upset with people when they do that, because I think oftentimes when people do that, there are other things that drive it. Relationships, disappointment in relationships. But I don't care where you go on God's green earth, in what language or what culture, we are designed to seek God. Acts 17, 27, 28. Another reader. Who would like to read this morning? Okay, Emily?
That they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for Him and find Him, though He is not far from each one of us. For in Him we live and move and exist, as even some of your own poets have said, for we also are His children.
You know what every man needs? Every man needs God. Now, there's a lot of perversion of it. I hate to see, we're going to talk about political things today, not in political detail, but just talking about the culture. Sadly, The political realm has become a religious experience today. You have within the philosophies and things taught within political things that there's almost a substitute for the political leaders for God. And I mean that. I'm not just talking to you. There's philosophies being put in. That's why you see the fervency that you see in the political realm and almost the cruelty. False religion can be some of the most cruel and blindly guided zealotry that you can find. And so what we'll find in Acts 17 is that man is designed to seek God. And that's the thing I like. Whoever I'm talking to, the strongest atheist, the most zealot proponent of something, I know they need God. And as a teacher, your goal is to try to get that heart open and that need open. And then you've got a chance to talk about the Lord. And so remember that. Ecclesiastes, I think, is another passage I have in the outline. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 11, and I'll just read that to you for time's sake. It says, "He has made everything beautiful in His time. He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end." And so again, as I meet anybody, atheist, agnostic, whatever, I know within them they want a purpose greater than the here and now. A lot of people stay very busy and they want to shut their mind down. They don't want to think about God. But I'll guarantee you there will be a door open for every person you know at some point in time where they'll ask some questions and want to know a little more. And I hope that we would be instructed enough to know the nature of God to be able to talk to them about this. It doesn't take much thought for man to realize his need of God. Is there a God? Is Jesus the Son of God? This is the start of the foundation. Now, I'm not teaching evidences. I just finished, as a matter of fact, I'm still teaching it actually, doing online, on evidences for the resurrection of Christ. And eventually, maybe we'll do that study here. But if there are those from a college background, educational background, and we won't talk about evidences of why I know that Jesus is the Son of God, there's logical, provable evidence for that. And so, but most of the time, the person who's struggling in this area, as I've said before, it's really more dealing with emotion, dealing with background. Is atheism, for instance. Atheism is becoming more prevalent in our society. I know that when my boys were here and they graduated from Albemarle County, it was a pretty big shock going from the Bible Belt to up here and find the number of atheists. And none of students that were atheists raised to be atheists. And, you know, my boys made friends with people from those backgrounds. And, you know, it's very interesting, again. It's not complicated to let a person know there is a God. I'm not looking down on people. Most people, and I'll just put it this way, this gets into another class I hope to eventually teach on deception. But most people, when it comes to religious things, when it comes to political things, the majority of people make decisions based on other things than facts and reason. As a matter of fact, we in our everyday life, we all of us do that. You've got to have some shortcuts in order to function. And most people haven't thought very deeply about it, even the atheist. And when you haven't thought very deeply about it, sometimes it's, you know, here's the reasons why I do it. There's very practical reasons why I do it. I look at relationships. I look at my peers. I look at people that I respect. There's a lot of these shortcuts that people use. And it makes very good sense for them to be an atheist. But hopefully, we can show there is evidence if somebody will think more deeply. Romans 1:20 is a passage. I know you've heard it and seen this a lot, but it's a wonderful verse. Romans 1:20, let's have another reader to this verse. Romans 1 and verse 20. Who else? A new reader here, somebody. All right, Martin.
"For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse."
What translation you got there?
New American Standard.
New American Standard. Good, good. A little more detail on that. I like that. I like different translations, so don't worry about what translation you use. I always like, you know, get some translations are a great way. You don't have to know Greek to know the the New Testament. Sometimes different translations are a great way to see more depth. So let's talk about this subject just briefly, just the concept. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen. What attributes of God can be seen in the creation? You look out, they say if you take a microscope, we go as detailed as possible, you go out and look at the cosmos. What do you see about God?
Power. His power?
What's that?
Power.
I'm so sorry. Power, okay. I've told people with mask on, I'm a hopeless case here with my hearing aids. So power. You see immense power. The vastness of the universe. And we still haven't figured out how vast the universe is. You know what? That's really remarkable. I love space stuff, science stuff. I love to see the latest on those things. And it's been amazing since I was growing up. Those little bitty stars you saw out there, well, they're galaxies. In some cases, it's like, whoa. It's amazing the vastness. What else do we learn about God? Let's say if we took a microscope and started going down at a microscopic level. If we looked at the atom, I just recently did a biography of Einstein. It was very interesting to see what we didn't know and what we're learning and what we still don't know. What do you see as you go into the microscope to see the germs? You see incredible design and structure. One of the things about Einstein, I find it fascinating. He believed, and he didn't believe in a personal God that is revealed in Scripture, but he believed in the order of the universe and laws. He saw over and over again the driving force behind his stuff is when people came up with some theory. They used to have this theory of the ether. And that was this unknown substance that nobody saw or observed from which light moves. And he goes, no. That's where he came to his theory of relativity. Is that he denied that and he knew there would be laws that would govern. He wished he knew more about math. You may say, he knew a lot about math. He wished he knew more because he found this universe is structured and orderly. How about our bodies? I like to make this argument with people. Again, there are those that are far more advanced in medical fields and things like that. But what do you see about our body? What's the thing that just screams out at you? Yeah, design. I'll tell you, as I'm getting older, I'm having, of course, you move like we did. We moved tons of books yesterday and things. My body is beginning to have new features that I wish they didn't have. But you know what I'm telling myself? Even with my limitations, I have an amazingly designed body, and I am blessed beyond measure. And so that's been my motivation the last few days, Look what God's given you. But how can we look at the complexity of the universe? And we could go 1,000, 100,000 arguments here of how life to exist here, the right distance from the sun, the moon was essential. There are other things you look at and all the factors, how we'd end up with an atmosphere and hold on to the atmosphere we have. I won't get into all that because I love that kind of stuff. We can't see design in this. But anyway, again, that's for another class. We're talking about the nature of God here. But let's suppose somebody agrees that God exists. Is that enough? We need to know who God is. And again, it's interesting the concepts the Romans had of gods. You know what their gods were like? The Roman gods. When somebody's making up a god, what's God going to be like? He's going to be like man. And it's fascinating. Some of the arguments I could give to you of the divinity of Jesus is that this character never been invented before. Man never thought of it. It's very interesting. You just look at the nature of God, the nature of Jesus. You look at, again, I'm right now doing a study of the different world religions and their concepts. It's very, very interesting. And how you look at Christianity rooted in the Old Testament, It is totally unique from world religions. You find the character of God, not just the existence of God. And Isaiah 40, here, I definitely want to cover this today. And definitely want to spend time here. Isaiah 40, 28 through 31. Let's read this and talk about it. Chris, go ahead, okay?
Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the weak and to those who have no strength. No might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fail. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint.
One of my early introductions to this verse is when I used to run a lot of races. I'd be on a 10K race and somebody would have that quotation of verse 31 on the back of the t-shirt. You know, they'll run and not be weary. Well, that's not talking about running physical races, okay? But still, I love that. I love that verse. Let's go back to verse 28. One of the things that Isaiah does, which I think is so powerful, he talks about moral things. He talks about doctrinal things. There are prophecies of the coming Christ and of other things. But rooted in every chapter of Isaiah is the nature of God. And so when he starts out with this question, have you not known? Have you not heard? What's he talking about? Have you not known? Have you not heard? Heard what?
Of him.
That's right. And what about of him? His character, his nature, his power, what he does for people. And could I say, I'm going back to, of course, this is, I guess, the introduction here, how the outlines go. But that's what I want us to do. If we had a goal for this class, it would be get to the point of having such a passion about the nature of God, we would love to talk with others about this. And I'll tell you, sometimes I'm good at talking about doctrine. Let's talk about doctrine. And again, fighting over doctrine, hopefully for the conclusion with good hearts, is fine. I'm not against that. But I have found, if you're dealing even with a doctrinal question, we've got to have the foundation of the nature of God. And I will show you again later classes, we're going to show how knowing God will lead us to help draw conclusions about doctrinal issues. And so again, and one more time, I've already done this in the introduction, if you were to sit down with another person and try to talk with them everything you know about God, what you're excited about God, how long could you talk? Our goal in this class is to extend that time of how long and how much we would talk about God and His nature. There are going to be some interesting things. One of my studies we'll do later is the jealousy of God. If somebody was to ask you, what is God being a jealous God? We're going to have a whole lesson on that. And that's an encouraging subject. Later. Okay. Comments or questions? I know I'm kind of leading the study so far. Comments, questions? Y'all feel free to raise. Yes, Chris.
Well, we know that we're told through the Word that the evidence of God is all around us, just by the creation, because none of this comes about without His hand.
Yes.
And in terms of what you're leading us towards, a strong desire to speak these things of God, I've heard this said that I disagree with this. All I know is I want to go to heaven. Well, that certainly is a wondrous goal. But should it not also be our goal to serve Him in a way to appreciate God to such a degree that we will serve Him, and in doing that service we will reach the very goal that you're talking about, is having a zeal?
Well, let me throw it this way, and this is great. What's heaven like? Why do you want to go to heaven? Somebody said that. Well, great. You won't go to heaven. All I want is to go to heaven. What's heaven like?
God is there.
That's right. When you talk about the book of Revelation and other passages, what's the heaven pictured like? Got golden streets. It's got glory and light and precious stuff. You know what all that represents? The character of God. All of it. It's God, 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 God. You're going to go to heaven. And what's the thing about heaven that makes heaven everything is God. You see, as a kid, I said, I don't really care to have a wall with a bunch of stones in it. You know, give me a closet full of toys, you know. I was thinking in physical terms, you know. But you see, it's not about things at all. It's about God. There'll be no tears. God is there. Our complete fulfillment. We are made to seek God, and this will be the ultimate fulfillment of everything we've ever wanted. But it's got to go back to God's nature. See how it impacts doctrine? It's quite interesting as you look at, once you get this framework, and you look at any doctrinal subject, I'll show you God in it. Very interesting. Hebrews 11:6. Let's ask this question. It's going back to my discussion about deception and why a lot of people don't get things that we say everybody ought to get. Hebrews 11:6. There is a big key here for us getting this subject. Why doesn't everybody believe in God? Why aren't people just packing in here and saying, you got to have a bigger place? We've got people just out here just... Martin told me the other day, he says, if we could just reach the people who once were Christians that have fallen away in this community, just imagine. I'll tell you what, you can't imagine how many there are in this community. We'd fill every place in this building if you drew a 15-mile radius around this building. There are that many people. But now, why does it happen? Why do people not see this about God? And this is a fascinating topic of how the Bible is written. And the whole Hebrews 11:6. Somebody want to read that? Hebrews 11:6, okay? Kathy?
But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he that cometh to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him.
Read that last phrase.
That He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him.
Ding, 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 ding. Here's a problem. Just like we talk about in deception. You have to put your mind towards seeking Him in order to get it. Do you teach some classes? Do you do any classes? Mm-hmm. Your students, all they have to do, just hear you lecture, go to sleep, come to class, take tests, and they're fine, right?
That'll get them minimal out of the class.
Yeah. What you got to do... If you want to pass that test, what you got to do? You got to diligently seek that knowledge. Now, I know my son Nathan, I was in engineering. I was an electrical engineer major and decided to preach. But I got one son that's an electrical engineer. And I remember what he would do. You know, they want to get ready for the test. They had one group of students that researched old tests. They had another group of students that researched this problem or this issue. It was kind of funny. The classes, I think they threw the equivalent of 3 quarters into one on purpose for shock and awe and to get people to work together. And guess what? If you're going to pass this course, I think it was thermodynamics. That was one of the real fun courses, at least. But you had to really seek it. And you know what we tend to do in life? Let's just be honest about all of us. We tend to try to let things be smooth. Okay? The lowest energy, what does water do? Water seeks the lowest level. We tend to, in our minds, take the easiest path. And again, there's a part in that that's not unwise. But if we're going to get this about God, we've got to say, I want it. Until that light bulb comes out, we can be very shallow in our thinking. And that's what's a very important thing about this class and about this whole subject. Yes, Emily.
I think sometimes people get this phrase mixed up. He's a rewarder of those who seek Him. They think that their reward is here on earth, and they get confused when they feel like they're being punished. when bad things happen, people die, and there are diseases, and there are awful things in our world, and they think, well, I must not be seeking the right God. He's not rewarding me. He's not rewarding these good people. But the reward is not here on earth. The reward is God.
But there's a sense the reward is here on earth, but it's not physical. Because guess what happens? Romans 8, when I first started reading the scripture on my own, I remember getting into Romans 8. In Romans 8:18, and this would be a way to answer the question of your, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed in us. I remember reading that and going numb as a teenager and going, I want that. And you know what that comes by? Knowing God. Romans 8 is filled with it. Okay, we're lambs for the slaughter, you know. We're persecuted, we're reviled, we're so on, and we're more than conquerors. While all these bad things are happening. And the thing that helped me early, Romans 8 was a critical verse. There's great power in knowing the character of God. Yes.
More in their mind than just, I don't have the facts.
Yes.
And I just think that's one of the biggest questions. In considering the nature of God is the question that people ask, how could God do this?
Yes.
How could a just, righteous, all these things God let this happen? And when we study his character, we know that the reward is not physical things, like life on earth.
Yeah. And it's interesting, and this goes back to another thing that's really been helpful to me. Did you know some people, when we talk about doctrinal questions, why is it everything put out there so plainly? Why can't we just in black and white say it, here it is, here's what it is? There's some subject like that. But you know what I found in most Bible subjects? You got to dig deeper, like the verse we talked about in building the foundation. And most people don't want to dig deeper. And it's in the shallowness of thought that we oftentimes are influenced by things that we don't get the subject, we don't get the answer, we don't get that which we appreciate, we don't get the foundation. And so, one of the things I did as a teenager, I remember I was probably 16 years old, I remember knowing the emptiness in my life. I went out on a February night outside, my parents didn't know, did this, went outside, I looked up at God, I saw the stars. And I says, God, if you're out there, I want to know you. And you know one of the ways you come to know God? Suffering, uncertainty. God will take the suffering and uncertainty. Matter of fact, in Philippians 1, it's listed as a gift. The gift of suffering. Why do bad things happen to me? God loves you. You know, seriously, it's some cases. Knowing God. Get ready. You want to get deep into it. Sometimes it's that suffering is the thing that drives you deep into this subject. One of the worst things that can happen to us is have it easy. And so maybe that hurting person, they may know, hey, there's something here. There's something here that's an opportunity. We're in football season. There was some interest in that where I came from in Auburn. Some vague interest in those things. There sometimes I'm wondering if I was in Corinth and that was the idolater's temple there. Of course, we got one here too, don't we? You know, but maybe not his, maybe basketball. I don't, you know. It, anyway, not, I'm a football fan, so I'm not criticizing football, but do you know what people down south, you know what they focus on when it comes to their football team? Who's the one to get the blame or the praise, particularly the blame? Who gets blame?
Coach.
The coach. And everybody's an expert on the coach. But not many people know the coach. I'm going to tell you a story, not that it's just interesting. When I was in, went to the University of Alabama, first day I got there, my roommate forgot his socks. We had to go to the mall to buy him some new socks. And ended up meeting a lady that just talked my ear off, invited me to church. And somebody says, oh, this is Miss Bryant. And I go, oh, good to meet you. Now, you guys, again, young people, y'all have no idea. You know, I've had learned this, Martin. My old illustrations, I get a younger generation, they go, who is that? Well, this was Mary Harmon Bryant, who was Bear Bryant's wife. And she took me under her wing. I talked to her. She'd talk to me for an hour or two. When I visited the service, this is the nomination she was at, she would always look me up by face and talk to me. But I'd call her on the phone. She'd talk to me 2 hours. I wished I could remember the conversations. But you know, there's a big difference between hearing, here's a guy out here, here's a coach. I mean, Coach Bryant was probably never at home, and she's probably almost a single wife in some ways with the demands of football. But you know what? That I got to know her. And, you know, both are dead now, but it's interesting the difference between knowing somebody exists and knowing someone. That's what we want to do in this series about God. We want you and I to more deeply get into the nature of our God. We're about at the ending time. Let's see if we want to go any further in this. We'll stop here. By the way, you're going to get a different outline next week. This one we're using, I'm going to give you a more detailed outline that I'm using up here. And hopefully eventually we'll have a PowerPoint up and you'll see what I'm seeing. But I want to just whet your appetite. Whet your appetite on this subject. I pray none of us ever, 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 ever will lose our desire to learn on this subject. Okay? So, thank you for your attention. And looking forward to being with you, man. If you didn't get a sermon outline or a class outline, they're in the back. That'll be another tradition I have. If I teach, you get an outline. And if nothing else, you'll know when I'm about to stop. That's true of the class. We have a certain class, but certainly on the sermon. So, all right. Thank you.
Gotta tell you how to stop that.
All right. What do we do next? Do we hit stop?
It should say save.
No. Okay.
And that takes a little while.